Hello, welcome back to Lumos Maxima. I am Sarah.
And I'm Delaney.
And we are in part two of part one of Romance of the Relationship series.
Oh,
okay, I want to do over. Okay. We are in our romance. We are not in our romance series. We're in our relationship
okay.
series.
Pause.
Oh, pause. Okay, I'm not cutting any of this out when I edit. You guys, I had the longest day. The hospital is wild. We had a local hospital shut down, so now my hospital gets like half the patients that they used to take.
Jeez.
Oh my god, let me tell you about it. I got hit in the face today by a patient. I've never come so close to smothering someone.
Wow.
I hope my work doesn't listen. Okay.
Whatever.
We are in our relationship series two of our podcast, and we are in part two of romance, which is going to be the younger generations. We have it labeled like student relationships, but not necessarily everyone is a student,
yeah,
at least of Hogwarts per se. So we're going to go with just like younger generation. If you want to know where all the older folks are, check out last week's episode. We did the older generation, so that's most of our parent relationships are last week. As per usual, we're going to have some spoilers, some mature content, some language, a lot of opinions. This one's probably going to be pretty opinion heavy.
Oh, yeah.
This will be one of the only times that Delaney and I do not agree.
Yep, it will be.
It's coming in this week, coming in
ready
hot.
For it.
Yeah. So I started to type up corrections, and let me tell you, we're just really good at this. So I don't really have any pensive correction corner additions.
Or we just recorded the episode early and can't remember.
Yeah, that's true. Or, well, I mean, I don't know. I edited it like fairly recently before I put it up. So okay. I don't know. I mean, it's an opinion. We can't really be wrong. Unless we paired people together that weren't together, but I'm fairly confident that
I think we're good.
We're good on that one. So none of that. But we do have a weekly wizarding question that, unlike last week, which didn't exist on the internet, this particular question has websites dedicated to it. It has metaphysical theory dedicated to it. The question is, where do vanished items go? Obviously, many, 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 many episodes ago, we talked about different Hogwarts subjects, and Transfiguration is one of them, and it's summoning and vanishing charms, and there's one other one. Transforming charms, I guess. Transforming spells. But vanishing is a huge part of wizarding culture.
Yeah.
The ability to make objects appear, disappear, summon objects, banish, in a way, objects. And there's vanishing in so many capacities.
Yes.
So we've got just like, you make an object disappear. Then we've got, you make an object turn into something else, which still means the original object is not there.
Yeah.
And then you've got things that are like the vanishing cabinets, which move things from place to place. But there's no guarantee that the apple that you put in is the apple that you get out, because
right.
If someone else has vanished an apple, it just comes, does it just come out of a, like the iCloud kind of thing? And it could be any apple. I don't know.
Hmm.
So the running theory is that vanished items go to like kind of a limbo area. And then when people summon things, they can summon them from like that limbo area.
Yeah.
Because unless you're doing like a specific Osseo charm, unless you're doing like a specific summoning charm for like an object that you know, like Harry summons his specific broom, if you just summoned any broom, there's like you're gonna get whatever comes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's no firm answer on where vanished items go, but it drives sciencey people crazy. I read like 9 times too many articles about this because people just had so many thoughts about it. And then, you know, it starts to get into like the morality of things, because they're like, well, it branches from making things vanish. Well, what if you vanish something that's alive? And then,
you know,
what happens to it? And then there's also like Transfiguration. So you turn a rock into a dog, but how much consciousness does the dog have? And then does the dog have the right to stay and not get transformed back? And it's kind of messy.
Wow.
Yeah, people. People take this shit real seriously. So the question is, just where do the vanished items go? If you have any thoughts on where vanished items go, totally hit us up. We would love to know where you think they go, because you can't be wrong, because there's no right answer. And so,
God, I have no idea. I like the limbo theory. I feel like that has to be it, you know?
Yeah, I like the limbo theory, because, like, well, I guess the idea of matter could be totally different in the magical world, but, like, on our planet, mm-hmm. when, like, matter can neither be created nor destroyed, so just because you burn something or you throw something far away so you can't see it anymore, it doesn't mean that what makes it up doesn't still exist and get reconstituted into something else.
Right, like it's gotta go somewhere.
Right, exactly. So I think that, now there was a very long Reddit post dedicated to the idea that all vanished objects in the wizarding world end up in the Room of Requirements. I feel like maybe the Room of Requirement is not,
I feel like that is
that kind of place.
Entire magical world? No.
No, maybe just like the British wizards.
It's got to be like a Land of like Misfit Toys situation. Like
exactly.
Somewhere it goes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so there could also be a physical location, like not a limbo that you can't see, but there could be a physical location, like all the shit just keeps popping up because it's more of like a portal thing.
That's true.
So anyway, we're not going to talk about that for too long, too much longer.
Hold on. I wonder if, like, to vanish it, you have to think about where to put it.
That's a good question. I feel like that would require so much thought, though, for a society that treats things as, like, fairly arbitrary, just in general. Like, material objects are, like, very disposable.
But there's also, like, a lot of thought that goes into other spells, so I wonder if that's part of it. I don't know.
That was fun. I know, that just seems like if you were on the fly, that
it'd be hard to,
yeah, it'd be hard to really focus that much energy. Although that's part of why, I mean, concentration is a big part of why there's such a wide variety of magical talent, because
right,
it's the people who can concentrate and focus and channel the most of their magic are the best at casting spells, you know, etc. Yeah. So maybe, I mean, there's obviously an element of concentration and focus. At least
I wonder if there's an ability. It maybe not like to vanish it, but like if you can vanish it temporarily to a specific place.
Huh. Maybe. Or then would it be some sort of transportation or like.
Yeah, like a transportation spell versus a vanishing spell.
Right. Like if you know where you're sending it, are you really vanishing it?
I don't know.
Do things just become invisible, but you can still touch them? I don't know. We could do this all night. We could do this all night. And if you guys hear creaking in the background, it's because I'm recording on my couch, which is the best part about Delaney and I not recording in the same place, is we're not sitting in like studio chairs. I'm lounging. Oh, there's that squeak. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can. I'm also lounging, but my couch doesn't squeak like that. So,
well, that's because you have a nice new couch and I don't. Okay. So anyway, now that we have really just ruminated on that bad boy for a minute, we are going to go ahead and dive into the younger generation / student relationships. Here we go. Just like last week, we're going to touch on a couple of the same points for each relationship. So one is going to be their status. Are they dating? Are they married? Did they just have like a flirtatious period? You know, what definition label did they have? Not that labels are at all important, but it makes it easier to conceptualize the content if it's like that.
Right, right.
The second is whether or not we think the relationship works. To be honest, there's only a couple that I don't think work in the context of the relationship at the time.
Yeah.
There are obviously a couple that like long-term wouldn't have worked, but like for being at a boarding school, like they're probably perfectly fine.
Right.
Then we're going to talk about the best and worst part / moment / quality, et cetera, of the relationship. And unlike last week's, where most of the relationships had pretty overall positive qualities and moments, and that we had a lot of them that didn't have any worse moments to us. A lot of these have like not so hot.
Yeah.
So we kind of broke it up by person. So we're going to do Hermione's relationships, then Ron's relationships, then Harry's, and then kind of like, not that they're, yeah, I was going to say miscellaneous. They're not important, but the not trios, I guess, so much. We have briefly in the past talked about the trios relationships in just like the briefest of terms when we did our trio series. But we're going to talk about these like a little more in depth. So the first one is one of my favorites in the whole series. Yay. Hermione and Victor Crumb. They date. That's just, I don't know if they ever have a formal relationship, but I would definitely say they were dating.
Yeah.
So if you guys don't know, you can go on, you can be dating multiple people, but you can really only have like a relationship unless you're, I guess, polyamorous with more, you can only have a relationship with one person. So dating is, it's a more casual relationship if you are confused and you're one of those Generation Z kids who talks, you're talking to someone. Yeah, that's kind of like dating, sort of. So they date, and then kind of after that, like they stay in contact, they write each other for years.
Yeah.
After that. So they meet in Goblet of Fire, obviously. And then they have still been like kind of chit-chatting up until Bill and Fleur's wedding, because Victor comes to the wedding and they're like, oh shit, like I didn't think we'd ever see each other, but we've been like totally keeping in touch.
Yeah.
So I think the relationship works.
I do too. I really, really like them together.
I do too. Definitely.
Like part of me feels like he doesn't necessarily like challenge Hermione very much, but at the same time, like, he is so supportive and like someone I wouldn't expect to be supportive, but I feel like he's just so supportive of her.
Yeah, yes, we both think it works. And the reason being, for me at least, is that they like each other for what they are, but not what other people like them for what they are. Explain what that means. He's a professional athlete. Yeah. And a lot of people like him because he's a talented athlete, but she likes him because he's passionate about something. Yeah, he's got like, a hobby that he's really good at and that he likes.
Give less of a shit. Like,
right.
And care that he's a professional athlete.
He likes that she's brainy. He doesn't like her that she's smart because she'll do his homework. He likes her because she knows all these things that he doesn't and they can teach each other stuff. So I feel like they really like the essential piece of the character. It's like Hermione's core is that she's like a kind of, a prude is a bad word, but she's a more conservative, really smart girl who's like kind of feisty, and he likes that about her.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So I definitely think that their relationship works. That's the best part. The worst part is not the age difference. People make a huge deal about like their assumed ages, but Hermione's a year older than the boys in the trio, and Victor is 17. So they're 14 and 17, which...
it's really not that big of a deal.
No. I dated seniors when I was a freshman in high school. It wasn't really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. She's... I just feel like she's a lot more mature than other people. I hate it when people say that. But, like, she's the one person that totally works for.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so,
I mean, she's probably more mature than Crumb. I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. So. the worst part, and I don't know that it's, like, the worst part. And if you only watch the movies, then it does seem like the worst part. In the books, it gets fleshed out a lot more. But he's, like, very persistent. Very persistent. Yeah. He invites her to come stay, like, with him over the summer, which in the movies, they make it seem like the Triwizard Tournament is like 7 days.
Yeah.
It's like almost a full year.
Yeah.
They spend a full school year. So, I mean, they know each other for like, I don't know, somewhere between like 8 and 10 months at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's like, well, you know, I don't really know. And it seems a lot creepier in the movies than I got the vibe that it was in the book. So I think in general, I really liked their relationship. I don't know that his lifestyle, I don't know that their lifestyles would have been compatible, but I also kind of got the idea that like he would, not that he would take a step out of the spotlight so she would be more comfortable, but he would be totally cool with like having a very private life just between the two of them. Whereas it's like with other professional athletes, maybe that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah, and I agree. And for me, one of the major problems that I see, like, could have become an issue down the road is, like, I don't think they really have much in common.
Yeah, they don't have a ton in common. Now, we never really get a gauge on Crumb's intellectual abilities.
Right.
But he is selected out of a school of hundreds of men, I guess.
Yeah.
He's the one that's chosen to represent them. So just the same way that people write off Fleur, people tend to write off Crumb. And, yeah, like, obviously they're excessively talented individuals. Like, an entire school of people, they're chosen kind of thing. So he's got to have something going on, I would think. Sure.
I don't think he's, like, brainy. I think he might be, like, street smart kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But really, it's, I think that they probably had a very different, like, upbringing.
Oh, yeah, they absolutely.
Different paths in life. They value different things. Now, they appreciate the other person's value, but they value mm-hmm. different things. So I don't know. I feel like they'd run out of things to talk about pretty quickly.
And they absolutely could. Now, if they got invested in each other's hobbies, I think they would be flawless. But the one part about their relationship that was always so appealing is that they're not super challenging for each other.
Right.
And I say that because this next relationship, I find that they're too challenging for each other.
And I disagree.
Because the next relationship, and this is like the only one that we are ever going to fight about, is Hermione and Ron. So mm-hmm. obviously they're not friends, then they're friends, then they date briefly, then they get married and they have kids.
Yep.
So I think that this relationship is bad. I don't think it works. I think it's bad for a plethora of reasons. But I will say what I think is the good part about the relationship, and that is that they are able to understand the traumas of one another very well because they experienced the same thing.
Yeah.
They went through the same, literally almost the exact same thing, like, for this entire chunk of their lives.
Yeah. And I think they do work. I don't think it's the most smooth sailing relationship, but I think that they actually bring out really great parts of each other. I think Hermione brings out parts in Ron and allows him to not be as, like, prejudiced and judgmental. I think Hermione helps him do that. And I also think Ron helps bring Hermione out of her shell and realize that, like, rules and everything are not the most important thing. And I think they make each other braver.
Yeah. So my one comment on, like, that actual aspect is that I don't know that they bring that out of each other. I believe that Harry brings that out of them, and they happen to be around each other, because we have plenty of scenes where it's like Ron and Harry, or it's Harry and Hermione, and they act the exact same way. So I don't know that their personal relationship is the catalyst for that character progression.
I'm not sure it's the catalyst, but I think it definitely affects it. I mean, with Hermione and her spew and all of that, I think that opens up Ron's eyes. And I don't think Harry necessarily did that as much as Hermione does.
Maybe in that one instance. Yeah. I don't know, I feel like their default communication is to be unpleasant to each other. And it is literally up until the Battle of Hogwarts. They spend years being very unpleasant to each other. And it seems like, I think, like, both of their moral compasses point north. So, like, they have qualities that are, like, they're loyal people. They believe in, like, the overall good and man and, like, that kind of thing. But mm-hmm. They hate the basic personality traits that, like, define the other individual. Like, every once in a while, Ron marvels at Hermione's brilliance, but only because it benefits him. There's no instance on, like a regular day for them that he's in awe of the fact that she is so smart. He actually spends all of book 5 and most of book 6 heavily mocking her for being so smart. Like,
yeah,
heavily mocking her. And, like, it hurts her. She cries in the bathroom after class because Ron spends an entire class making fun of her about being smart. Like, that's so shitty. And it doesn't work for people to say, like, well, he's doing it because he likes her.
Oh, no, bullshit. Fuck that.
Because at this point, they're, like, 16. She's almost 17. Like, they're not children.
No.
And she hates that he's, like, kind of a goofy dude. Like, she hates that he's not smart. like she is, and she hates that, like, he not simplistic and then like he's not able to grasp more things, but like he's very content with where he is, which is great for him, but she hates that. He's got no drive and she hates that. Like they hate, I think, very basic parts about each other, and they treat each other so poorly the entire time.
So about treating each other so poorly, I think that they have points where they're both, yeah, kind of nasty. But I also think that I think a lot of it isn't necessarily to be nasty. I think they're real with each other. I think they're not blowing smoke up each other's asses. I think that when Hermione's being a bitch, Ron calls her out. And when Ron is being fucking stupid, Hermione has no problem telling him that. So I don't know if it's necessarily like being horrible to each other and just bickering, or it is just being honest. And that's how they communicate.
I don't know, because Harry has just as many bonehead moments as Ron does that he like doesn't pick up on. He lacks social finesse. He's got no emotional aptitude. And Hermione never responds in that way because Harry doesn't treat her poorly.
Yeah, but you treat people
very, like, very few times does she treat Harry, who has a lot of the same opinions and pitfalls as Ron, the same way, because Harry's just not a dick. Like, most of the time, he's got, you know, moody book five kind of thing. But I also find, like, the only times that they're even remotely pleasant to one another is when there's someone else involved. Like, without Harry, there is no relationship. And it's always weird to find, for me to have relationships that are, like, dependent on an external character.
Okay. Because... So one point on that is that we don't ever see Ron and Hermione just together without Harry.
Right, but that's because it doesn't happen.
We don't know that because this Hermione is from Harry's point of view.
It is all from Harry's point of view, but we have plenty of moments where it's just Hermione and Harry, and then Harry and Ron. And like Harry narrates what the other people are doing. Like he'll narrate that Ron is like off doing shit, or that Hermione is like in the library or whatever, but like they don't spend time together. I don't even know that they would run in the same circle if they didn't both have the centerpiece that is Harry.
Now, I don't agree. I do think that there are times that they're together because Ron or Harry has mentioned it. Like he'll just randomly come across him and Ron and Hermione or something like that. But about the point where Hermione is never like nasty to Harry, I think that even though Harry and Ron have a lot of similarities, their personality is slightly different. And I think Ron, like, you have different friends that you treat differently. There are some friends where I'd be like, hey, that's a stupid move. Like, you need to think about this. And then I'd also have friends who I would literally be like, please shut the fuck up. You're an idiot. Because they like snap into it more there. And I think Ron is definitely that way. I don't know if that's the reason for the difference, but that's a possibility. I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, I think like, so if one of the people decided to leave the friend group, like if Harry said he wasn't going to be friends with Hermione anymore, Hermione wouldn't exist to Ron. And I also think that if Harry told Hermione, I'm not going to be friends with Ron anymore, Ron wouldn't exist to them. Like, I think that,
well, no,
they are in that circle.
So like, book four, Harry and Ron are fighting, and Hermione and Ron are still friends.
No, Hermione and Ron are not still friends.
Yeah, they are a little bit. Because she ends up being the go-between.
She's only the go-between because, like, they want Gryffindor to be victorious in this tournament. It's a group win. I don't think that she facilitates it because she's like, oh, I have to, like, keep this together. But, like, even if she
does want that, yeah.
Right, but if she's facilitating it for that reason, it's because she's keeping the group together, not because she cares that she gets to be with Ron.
Well, I think she cares about both Ron and Harry individually. And she wants them to be friends. She thinks it's stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you wrote down the aspects of their relationship and you changed their names to Jack and Jill, people would be like, this is so toxic. They treat each other poorly. They have extremely different upbringings. They have very different values, like beyond the basic, like good-natured human ones. They're awful to each other in terms of actual romance.
Like, no, I do agree. There is like zero romance.
It's not that there's zero romance. It's that, like, they purposefully do things to hurt the other person. Like,
yeah.
Throughout books 5 and 6 and a lot of 7, they're
yeah.
purposefully doing things to, like, make the other person feel shitty. And, like, the ends don't justify the means for me when
No.
it comes to relationships. Because if you had to go through so much shit in the beginning, but, like, it worked out, there's still so much baggage that's associated with that that, like, I don't know. We read about their relationship in Cursed Child and, like, it's not great.
Yeah.
And, like, JK didn't even intend for them to end up together. And I think that's, like, I think that's for good reason. I don't think that they should have ended up together. Obviously, we can't spend the whole episode talking about, like, just these two, but I find their relationship extremely problematic. And if you're going to model your relationship after any relationship in the book, this would literally be my second to last choice to model the relationship after, because, like, they're not really even friends until the 5th book.
And yeah, I definitely don't think that it's like, oh, like, relationship goals. Haha.
No, but I don't. And, like, I don't, there are a lot of other people that I would have paired them with, just in general. There are a lot of other people I would have paired them with before each other.
I'm not personally sure about that. I'm not sure that there's anybody else that could understand each other like Harry or Hermione and Ron do, but I don't think that they have the best relationship of all time. No. But I still think it works. I think it can work and not be, like, perfect all the time, you know? So, anyhow.
Yeah. So, this next relationship is one that I actually think functions for, like, much better reasons. Ron and Lavender.
Ugh.
So, they... It's Broke. Very... So, my very brief apology to Lavender Brown. I'm sorry that I continue to judge you on your movie character. Although she oftentimes plays, like, just a giggling schoolgirl, I think she's, like, probably has a pretty good heart.
Yeah,
like, probably. When you're reading through the book. So Ron and Lavender kind of date. She's like, very into Ron. She thinks he's, like, cute and funny and athletic, and, like, she finds his humor funny. Hermione finds it appalling. And, like, I think she likes him for the right reasons, if there are, like, truly right reasons to like someone. Ron obviously uses her, which is, you know, bad Ron. Bad. Yeah. So they date. You get the first, like, hint about Lavender being, like, kind of having the hots for Ron in Chamber of Secrets. So she's, like, crushing on him for a while. They date in Half-Blood Prince. I think that the relationship could work if Ron was a different person. So, I mean, I guess that means it doesn't work. Just because, like, he dates her because he wants to make Hermione very jealous, which is obviously unfair to Lavender and also shitty to Hermione. But, like, Lavender's, like, pretty into him. So if Lavender dated someone that was actually into her, like, she'd be a good girlfriend. She has that potential.
So
I think maybe
this is actually we're going to disagree slightly.
Again? Oh, no.
I don't think Ron and Lavender work. I think that Lavender likes the idea of Ron, and I think that, you know, like, how you said, like, she likes his humor and all that. I don't think so. I think she likes the idea of him, and I think that as time went on, she would become, like, the nagging girlfriend and wanting him to change, like, all of it. I don't think that she would be okay with it, and I definitely don't think she would be okay with Ron and Hermione being friends. I think she is probably very jealous. Now, I don't blame her for that, because obviously Ron is using her. But no, I don't think that it would last. I didn't like them. No.
No, I don't think it would last. I only think it would work if Ron was dating her for the right reasons. Like, I think if they...
I don't even think that would work.
I mean, they have pretty similar backgrounds, as far as we know. Like, find each other cute and funny, like, at least for a boarding school relationship, I think that would work. I don't know that they would, like, get married and have kids, but
as like a first teenage relationship, it's what I kind of expect.
I don't think
that Lavender is really even knows what she wants, and I don't even think that she really likes Ron. I think she likes the idea of Ron.
Yeah, but, like, what idea of Ron is there to like? Honestly, he plays Quidditch, but, like, he's not very good for the most part.
The best friend, chosen one. And also,
But Lavender, like, has zero affection for Harry. Like, she doesn't give two shits about him. There's no indication that she even cares.
But a lot of times when you have, like, a crush on somebody, you can make this person up in your brain, especially when you're not close, because they weren't friends before or something. she kind of barely knew him.
So she they spend every day together for 5 years.
Well, they were in classes together. That doesn't mean that she actually knew him.
Okay, guys, Delaney and I were best friends in high school. We never went to each other's houses a single time. We only saw each other at school.
Yeah, but we talked all the time in school.
Yeah, I guess they didn't
talk all the time.
Yeah, but they live together too, though. Like, they live in the same dormitory. I feel like they cross paths a lot more.
Your college dorms?
Yeah, I did. No,
I did not. I didn't even know my neighbors.
I did. Well, I'm also a social person. But like the Hogwarts dormitories are a lot more social than a college dormitory because there's one common room for everyone, not like one for each floor or one for your like pod or whatever. I think that they know each other a little more than like, oh, we had class together that one time. They have literally every class together.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they've had like actual conversations. Can you consider who Ron is? He wouldn't just have a random conversation with a random person. No.
I mean, she walks up to him and they make out. So he's like pretty comfortable with her.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think it was, oh, holy shit, a girl's making out with me. Sick. I don't think they really had much prior interaction at all.
I think they would at least have some sense of familiarity just based on the setting. Like, yeah.
There's tons of people I went to high school with that I've known since I was literally like 5 years old. And I'm not friends with them. I don't really know anything about them. But if I saw them on the street, I'd be like, oh my God, how are you? Wah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like these people eat together. They live together. They have every class together. I feel like there's like a little more familiarity. And there's also a sense of camaraderie between the houses. Like you're put with people with similar personalities to you. It's like you bond with them.
It doesn't mean that you talk to all of them at all. Especially someone like Lavender, when Ron is like didn't even see her until she literally made out with him.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't think that they should have gotten married by any means. I don't mean to make it sound like that. Definitely
no, not. But I don't think it would work in any real sense. I think it would be like
I think just like in school
a few months
they could have annoyed each other for a couple of years.
I think it could be like a little fling. That's about it.
Speaking of little flings, this next one was, I'm working on my segues, okay, guys? I will get not better. Harry and Cho Chang.
Yeah.
So, I have in quotations that they semi-date, which is, like, as lenient as I can be with.
Yeah.
I do think that this is Harry's first kiss.
Yeah.
Is with Cho. So Harry, now, to be fair, he has the hots for her from like pretty early on in his Hogwarts career.
Yeah.
And he like really, really wants to date her during the whole Triwizard Tournament. Like he wants her to be his date, but she goes with Cedric, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then Cedric dies.
Shit.
Poor Sedgwick. And then like Harry and Cho, there's a lot of complicated feelings. The whole thing was like 5 pay levels above Harry's emotional processing. So I don't think it ever would have worked.
No.
Also, Harry's like, he's still in that phase where like girls are super gross, but he's like also very curious because they do go on one date. It happens to be on Valentine's Day. They go, do they go to the Leaky Cauldron? They go to Three Broomsticks. They go to like one of the Hogsmeade.
They don't go to either one of those.
Where do they go?
A really shit place.
And it's been fully decorated for Valentine's Day with like little animated cupids and hearts. And like everyone's on a date. And Harry's like, holy shit, I didn't know we were like going on a date. And Cho tries to hold his hand. And like the line in the book, I think like verbatim just says, Harry wasn't really sure he wanted to hold Cho's hand. And like that's where that ends. Yeah. They do have a beautiful kiss, but she cries. This is where the famous, like, just because Ron has the emotional range of a teaspoon line comes from, because Harry gets back and he's like talking to his friends and Hermione's like, well, obviously she's conflicted because like she likes Cedric, but he died, blah, blah, blah. I think the relationship is perfect for what it is, which was like kind of that first relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The best part is that Harry realizes he is probably capable at some point of a romantic relationship. The worst part is that Cho is like too emotionally mature for him and like wants what she wants, and he's like totally not there.
For me, I think this is another representation of how you can have a crush on somebody and like manifest this idea of them in your head, and then when you get to that point that you think you want to be at, you go, oh shit, I don't know about this. Never mind.
No, not, like, Harry and Cho actually do have quite a bit of interaction. Like, he admires her for being smart and athletic because for she's one of the only Quidditch players who, like, really gives him a run for his money. They're, like, kind of flirtatious. Like, we get an idea of their flirting and, like, it's written out that they're, like, kind of flirtatious, but, like, in a super awkward way. Like, 13-year-olds trying to flirt.
And then they get to the date, and then, like, it's the place that Harry finally wants to be is on a date with Cho, and then it's, like, not feeling it. Never mind.
Yeah, I think had they gone to something that was, like, they were just going to, like, sit down and, like, get a snack and, like, have a coffee or whatever, it would have been a little different. Because I think she just went too – it was just too much too quick for him.
Probably. But also, again, Harry kind of wanted it. He thought he wanted it, and then he didn't.
Well, he did want to go on a date. He didn't realize it was Valentine's Day, which was the day that they picked. So
That was a big mistake.
Yeah.
Big
mistake. But all in all – it wrapped up nicely. I don't remember who Cho ends up marrying. I don't think I know who she marries either. But we know that she doesn't marry Cedric because he's dead. Cho,
for the puffle.
Cho marries just a muggle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I Googled, you know, like, she Harry Potter.
A muggle.
It just says the spouse of Cho Chang was a muggle who married her sometime after the Battle of Hogwarts in 1998. Okay, so
it doesn't even warrant a name or a marriage date.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, to be fair, a lot of people got married like before, in the middle of, or directly after the Battle of Hogwarts, and there's no like firm day. Anyway. The next
her boyfriend dies, and then she just gets she married a muggle. I don't know.
I mean, once you date the chosen one, can you really date anybody else? No. Okay. This next one. Oh, this one gets me heated. So Harry and Romilda Vane. First of all, I don't think there was.
They were not a thing.
No, they were not a thing. This is like Lily and Snape 2.0. Except for not as bad, but like also someone almost dies. So around the time around the time that Slughorn starts hosting like big slug club parties, all the girls have the hots for Harry. And Harry's like, ew. And Romilda Vane, like, they're in this, she's a Gryffindor. And they're, like, all hanging out in the common room, and she, like, ambushes Harry. And she's like, hey, you want some, like, gilly water something? Whatever. And he's like, no. And she's like, okay, well, eat these chocolates that my grandmother sent me because I don't want them. And he's like, what the fuck?
She's real rapey with it.
She's so freaky with it. So it turns out it's got a tainted love potion and all the chocolates, and Ron eats them. Okay, first of all, what the fuck, Ron? Not his. It's clearly addressed to Harry.
I mean, are we surprised?
No. So Ron eats them, and he thinks that he's in love with her, and then he almost dies. Actually, he almost dies twice in that night. But anyways,
poor guy.
We do not condone the use of love potions.
No, it's like a date rape drug.
Yes, it is coercion. And just so we're clear, coercion is not consent. If you wear someone down and then they say yes, that is not consent. If you have to beg someone and then they say yes, that is not consent. If you have to be
drug someone and make them love you, it's not consent.
Persistency is only cute when it's respectful. Persistency for the sake of getting what you want at all costs is not okay.
No.
So, yeah. So a lot of people put this under the category of, like, dating in the Harry Potter series. No, fuck no. But we talked about it because we wanted you guys to know that love potions are bad. Although the Weasley twins are brewing these love potions and smuggling them into Hogwarts disguised as perfume bottles.
It's just real rapey to me.
It is. You know? Now, I have a feeling that the love potions that the Weasley twins are brewing are like, they make you think someone's like, yeah, like, oh, he's like super cute today. Oh, it was a love potion that lasted like an hour. The love potion that's in these chocolates, we find out was not the Weasley's love potion. So,
yeah.
But yeah, anyways, moving on from that to another one of my favorite relationships, Harry and Ginny.
Yeah, I actually do really like them.
So, you like them now?
Yeah, I do, I think.
So, they meet, obviously, like, super early on. It's one of the first people that Harry meets because he meets, like, the whole Weasley clan at one time. And Ginny crushes on Harry literally from the day she meets him.
Which, I think that's probably the cutest part, yeah.
I think that's so cute because, like, she's such an independent, like, does whatever the fuck she wants person. But she also doesn't just pine away for him. That's the best part of their relationship to me, is that, like, Ginny does whatever she wants until Harry's, like, ready to be with her. And then she's like, great, this is awesome. But, like, if you don't want to be with me, I'm also going to be okay. I dig that. Like,
me too.
I want to be Ginny, but I can't because I'm an emotional, just mothball. And I just get stuck on things really easily. And that's how I ended up dating someone named Harry. Because I fell in love with him on our third date. I know. I'm so pathetic. Okay.
I know you're laying down on a couch right now, but you're not in a therapy session, okay?
I need someone to email us and tell me that it's okay that I did that. Because now we live together and we have two dogs. Okay, I need a minute. You guys, it's so embarrassing. I'm such, like, a bitchy, independent person, but, like, I'm a puddle with my boyfriend. Okay, so they know each other for a really long time. The worst part about the relationship for me is that there's a very awkward line due to who Ginny is, like, what family she's a part of. Not at all in an incestuous way whatsoever, but Harry is an honorary Weasley, and Harry is friends with all of her brothers, and her parents like love him, but they don't love him in the capacity of like, oh, he's gonna be our son-in-law. They love him in like, oh, this is Ron's best friend who like is underfed and we should protect him at all costs. Like,
right.
So I think it's good that it takes so long for their relationship to actually form so that they can become like independent adults and then get together, because that preserves like that family aspect that means so much to Harry. Like, so he's one of the most important things in the world to him is the Weasley clan as a whole. So,
I think I
like that.
Yeah. And I think it's good that they kind of kept it separated for a while, because I think that at the point when they do get together, Ron is emotionally mature enough, particularly with his feelings for Hermione, that he understands, and it's not like, why are you trying to bang my sister and like all that shit, you know what I mean?
Can you say that again?
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, Sarah? it's just funny that you said, oh, you're trying to bang my sister. I'm sorry, give me a minute.
How is that funny?
I don't know, it's just the way you said bang. Okay.
Bang.
Stop. So
bang.
Stop.
Bang.
Bang, 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 bang. If you guys haven't seen that episode of How I Met Your Mother, don't watch it. That show is awful.
That is not where I thought that was
going. So I think the relationship definitely works. I think besides the trio, Ginny's one of the only people who would really understand like what Harry's been through and what he'll continue to go through. I think she's very cool under pressure, which makes her a great partner for like the most famous person in the wizarding world. She's like very capable on her own. She understands.
pretty emotionally mature too.
Which she is, and she's very understanding about like all the shit that he has to go do, because they're kind of together, and then like they split up at the beginning of 7. Yeah. They break up. They agree. Well, they don't. I don't know that they break up, because it wasn't like a hard feelings kind of thing, but they agree to stop seeing each other kind of thing. She's, I don't know that like cool with it is the way to phrase it, but she's very understanding. Like, he's got to go do that. So I think that they're great. There are a lot of great qualities. Oh, I'm just going to yawn too. And I think that they bring out a lot of really good stuff in each other. She helps him to feel some security in terms of a romantic relationship, which is something he lacks for a very long time. He didn't really get to see one growing up necessarily. And obviously his friends are not good at it. And I think she gives him a lot of like a very quiet support and confidence and the fact that like he could be a good partner. I like them. I'm really glad they get together. I'm not glad that they're portrayed the way they are in Cursed Child. But I choose to think that they were better than that.
I choose to think that most of Cursed Child is fan fiction.
Have you read Cursed Child yet?
No, but I know the entire plot and everything.
It's awful. You have to read it to really hate it. Did I tell you that my copy is a misprint?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, all right.
You told the podcast that too.
Yeah, well, guys, I'm still mad about it. Okay, so those are like our big relationships. Now we're going to kind of get into our, quote, miscellaneous individuals. The first is Ginny and her boys.
Yes.
And we don't mean this at all in a slut-shaming whatsoever. Ginny just dates a lot of people. I don't know that she necessarily has, like, serious relationships with any of them.
Nah.
But she dates Dean Thomas, Michael Corner. There's, like, several. And they're, like, kind of within the same... I mean, there's not that many people at Hogwarts, so they're always in the same circle. She dates a lot of the Gryffindor boys, though, which, like, is just so hard for Ron. He just can't handle it that his sister is out there slaying, and he has yet to kiss anyone. It's so hard for him. The best parts of Harry Potter are when Ron says something like, you can't just be out there snogging people. And Ginny's like, just because the only person you've ever snogged is Aunt Mildred. And you're like, nice. And she's like, it's just totally not your call, like who I date and what I do. And she's just independent like that. So you get yours, Ginny. Good for you.
Hell.
Then we've got Cedric and Cho. So
I loved them.
I thought they were great. I thought that they both had like, they had the semi-air of superiority. Not because they're wealthy, but they're just two proper bitches.
They're so proper.
They don't formally date as far as we know. Like they don't have a relationship, but they do date. I thought the relationship worked really well. We didn't really get to see it grow, so we can't pass too much judgment on it.
The third time you've brought up that Cedric died.
I know. He's so dead. But I think that they would have had a very strong, good, amicable relationship. There's a lot of fanfic about them. So
I think they probably could have been in it for the long haul.
Yeah, I think they definitely could have been in it for the long haul. I thought they were very compatible from the small bits that we saw. There weren't really any bad qualities about it.
The only bad quality was that Cho was flirting with Harry.
Only thing for me that I wasn't like super a fan of is that like Cho obviously was very interested in someone else as well. But it seemed like Cedric was pretty singularly focused on Cho.
Yeah.
Which like not a big deal to like two people. It's just hard when one person's really invested and one isn't.
Right.
So next we have a couple of the Weasley boys. The first is Fred and Angelina, who I love them together.
I really liked them. Yeah.
They don't ever formally have a relationship, but they are very flirtatious. And then they briefly date in, Goblet of Fire. Fred asks Angelina to go to the ball, the like Triwizard or the Yule. Let me get my words together. The Yule dance ball thingy,
Yule
whatever
ball.
It is. Thank you. And they go and they have like a fun time, and they just are portrayed as like being flirtatious and like definitely into each other, but like pretty chill about it. for many, yeah, many years until Fred dies.
How many people you can mention die, Sarah?
We already said our spoiler alert. I don't care. So it makes it super weird that George and Angelina get married.
Yeah. I'd be iffy if I were George.
Right. Angelina, you know, whatever. But like, Fred was your brother.
Yeah. And it's not only that, I'd be like, is she dating me for me or is she dating me because
I remind her of Fred. Yeah. So I like never even see or read George and Angelina flirting.
It's weird.
They end up married. I think that that may have been a momentary lapse in writing judgment that they end up married because it doesn't make sense.
I mean, the only way it makes sense is that it's two people who really loved Fred and maybe they bonded over their mourning, but
yeah, I don't think it works. But yeah, they're married. They get married. I don't have a lot to say about that one because when I was like, oh, I wonder who Angelina like does end up with, and I was looking into it, it's fucking George. And I was like, that's so strange.
The one thing we don't really know anything about their relationship. I mean, who knows? Maybe her and George are even better together. But
yeah, I mean, I guess if she was close, if she was close to Fred, she probably by default also had to be close to George. Like they were kind of a pair.
Yeah.
But so anyway, the next Weasley son is Percy and Penelope. Yeah. Two neurotic, like holier than thou people, totally worked for me though. Thought they were great together.
I mean, they're probably great together the same way that Petunia and Vernon were great together. Is that they're both
love each other. Horribleness. I mean, like, Percy definitely goes off the deep end, but as far as we know with Penelope, she was just always a stickler for the rules, which. I mean, I'm okay with it, you know.
She's probably not a great person.
Well, Penelope and Percy don't end up together. They split up like kind of unamicably in book 4. I don't know. They date for a while and then they split up, and it seems like them splitting up kind of coincides with Percy going like full fascist. Yeah. And he marries some random chick named Audrey.
Sick.
That we've never heard of. She gets a name. Cho's husband doesn't get a name, but Audrey gets a name.
Fuck that. Fuck Audrey.
Yeah. So this next relationship.
Justin for Cho.
Yeah. Seriously. Cho deserves better than that. She is an athletic, smart, funny, polite individual.
Who's been through a lot in her life, okay?
Yeah, for real, man. Seriously, though. Neville and Luna, just so we're clear. Just because the movies tried to make them a thing doesn't mean they were ever a thing in the books.
Yeah, agreed.
I
kind of think they may have, like, they could have maybe worked, but it definitely did not happen in the books.
I mean, like, I think they could have been together, but nothing in the writing of the books really even indicated that, like, they were into each other to me. Luna just has, like, the flower child's kind of vibe going on, but I never saw them getting together. So that was one part about the movies that really ticked me off, was that they made it seem like they were so into each other. They make a point to give Neville a scene where he's like, oh, I've got to go find Luna, and you're like, no you fucking don't. Bro. Neville ends up,
it's definitely one of those things that, like I said, I could see like their personalities working out, but there was no indication that
they had been written to be together, sure, but like they're not written to be together. He marries Hannah Abbott, who we kind of see like
her mom.
Her mom is more famous than her in the books.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just shame on the WB for trying to make Neville and Luna a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So just like last week where we had the non-relationship relationships, our first one is Neville and plants.
It's so funny.
I love it because Neville, the only genuine affection he seems to ever have in his whole life is for plants.
I know. It's so cute.
I love it. Oh, yeah. And I'm yawning. Which, like, he takes it to, like, a serious level. He ends up being the herbology teacher at Hogwarts when all of Ron, Hermione, and Harry and Ginny's kids go to Hogwarts. We get the idea that he's, like, a really good professor. Obviously, him and plants and Barty Crouch Jr. save Harry's life. So that's pretty cool. I think it's awesome that he turns out to be a professor, that he teaches the subject that he teaches. Like, that, I really enjoyed that character development for him. But, man, the boy loves his plants.
He really loves his plants.
He really does. A lot. And Trevor. There are so many, like, sexual innuendos in the books, now that I'm cycling through them again, that are, like, Neville and his plants.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, do you want to see my, and like, it's some weird plant name, and they're like, no, Neville, we don't want to. And he's like, but it's a plant. And everyone's like, ah, Neville, funny guy.
Yeah.
So go Neville. Then we have Seamus and fire.
Love it.
This is the one thing the movies really nailed for me.
Yeah, it was really funny.
Was that they, like, at all possible moments they threw and, like, he just could not get this shit under control. And he is absolutely a little pyromaniac, which I am too, so rock on.
Oh, out of all the random things in the books, the movies made sure to get in the fact that Seamus always blows something up.
Always. And then, like, it comes to beautiful fruition when he blows at the bridge. Like,
yeah,
I dig it. I dig it. And then the last one we have is not a good one, but I thought it was funnier when I was writing it because I was kind of tired, but just young Voldemort and killing people. And then, killing muggles, and then also sending random people to Azkaban.
So, yeah, I mean, clearly he enjoyed it a lot.
He sends more than one person to Azkaban, and he definitely kills more than one muggle. So, good for him.
Definitely more pastime for him.
Yeah, it's a hobby. It's like...
It's even more than that. It's his life's passion.
It is his passion. Oh my gosh, I can't stop yawning. You guys, we have the most stressful days at the hospital now. I cannot express to you how tired I am. Yeah. Holy shitballs. That, correct me if I'm wrong, is that all our relationships?
Yeah.
That's probably all of our relationships. Which means that's it for romance, which means if we miss something, you got 1 week to let us know, because once we get into friendships, romance is dead.
Romance has been dead for a long time, yeah.
Oh, you guys, Delaney is sad.
No, I don't think I am.
We do, however, at the end of romance, have a special treat for you guys. We're going to talk about all the cool shit that we got for Christmas and or Harry Potter things that we've done lately, because... as it turns out, we have done some cool Harry Potter shit lately. So yeah. I drink a lot of coffee. I got a jumbo Slytherin coffee mug for Christmas that holds 20 ounces of coffee.
Yes.
It's fucking huge, you guys. And it's beautiful. It's got the beautiful Slytherin house crest on it. It's like all gray and green and like gorgeous. And then I also got from my mama... it's like this comfy ass sleeper dress kind of thing. It's a cashmere cotton blend, which I thought was odd, but that bitch is soft. And it's got the TriStar Harry, like the, on all the pages, the TriStars on it. And then it has a Gryffindor house crest on it. And I was like, Mom, whoa. And she's like, I know that you're a Slytherin, but this was the only one that they had. And I just felt like you had to have it. So it was really sweet. And I wear it all the time because it's like super soft. And I'm 15% Gryffindor. Okay. I feel like it can rock the sleepy dress thingy, but it's super great. I have no idea where she got it. So if you guys want to get one, that's too bad. Nice. So yeah, that's what I did that's Harry Potter related lately. Oh, also I got my tattoo touched up.
Oh, nice.
Because it was time. Yeah. So, yeah. So go me. Delaney did way more cool stuff though.
Yeah. So, my cool t-shirts. No, just kidding. But I did get t-shirts. And I got one that says Lumos Maxima on it. So,
yeah. Lil Bitch didn't get me one though.
Okay. Well, you just ruined your surprise, bitch.
Did you get me one? So, guys.
I was planning on it. I've got a coupon. I was going to get you one.
I love coupon shopping. The reason that I wanted to do this little segment is because for the last, I don't know how long, many, many years, for gift-giving holidays, especially like Christmas, we get each other almost exclusively Harry Potter-related objects, but we didn't exchange gifts this year. So
it was a rough year.
We just have had a really long year. So we didn't exchange gifts this year because we're both poor or something like that. But she did something really cool that unfortunately I couldn't fly down to be a part of it, but I saw all the pictures and it was flawless.
Yeah. So what she's referring to is that me and my friends worked for me and my friends who live here, obviously. But Sarah and I don't live in the same city. We've talked about that. Anyways, we decided that we wanted to have a Harry Potter party and we decided that it was going to be a New Year's party. So we did a whole Harry Potter feast and then like a drinking regular New Year's Eve party after. But so my friend, I helped my friend decorate her entire apartment as a Harry Potter Christmas. So we had the tree that had the garland as the different house scarves. And then we had like chocolate frog boxes. We had Deathly Hallows symbols. We had some bow truckles. We had all the Horcruxes, like, and anything that you can think of, we probably had it on there. Cauldron cake boxes, like the whole nine yards. So that was one element. And then we also had flying keys hanging from the ceiling. We had candles hanging over the table. We had Quidditch beer pong. We had letters addressed, Hogwarts letters addressed to all of the guests. Like it just, it got insane. We made like a cardboard and like brick fireplace. We made the door be 9 3/4 with the brick. Like it was insane. And then the feast was Harry Potter inspired British food. And we even made treacle tarts and pumpkin pasties. And then we had Harry Potter themed drinks as well.
So, yeah. It fun. Looked so fucking cool. I wish we could show you guys, but
I might have some stuff on the Instagram. We'll see.
Yeah, you might have to throw some up there if you guys want to see it. They did such a good job. So if you are like a super Harry Potter fan and you're wanting to have a Harry Potter theme party, just do it. Like
it's so fun.
It's so fun. I've been to one before and it's just a fucking blast. And don't invite any lame ass people that aren't Harry Potter fans and you'll have way more fun with juicy Harry Potter buddies. Trust me. So
yeah. And if you don't get drunk like we did, you could play like Harry Potter games and stuff, but we did not
do that. No. So
we did have a scavenger stuff and have little gifts.
Oh my god, there was like 9,000 things on the list too. I was like, oh
yeah, it was fun.
By the end of the night, no one's finding anything.
Ooh. No, actually it only took like 15-20 minutes for people to find everything. Square.
Wow. So that's kind of like what we did that was Harry Potter-esque to get us into the new year, get us into the podcasting spirit, and this is it for romance. We are washing our hands of romance. We are tired of talking about romance. That's not true. Romance is fun. It's fun because like it's such a non-sexual book that like there's very non-sexual romance. I find it funny.
To the point where it's like you said, like, oh, like Cho tried to hold his hand and he was like, I don't want to hold her hand.
Ooh, hands, gross. Did she wash them? Yeah, it's like, it's so funny because when you read Harry Potter as a kid, you don't question it. And then you read it as like a teenager or adult and you're like, man, all these bitches be banging hard.
There's much going on.
If you think that we missed a relationship, if you think that we did a disservice to one, if you have critiques or comments about things that we talked about, we want you to hit us up because we're on like every social media platform ever and you can reach us in so many ways. You can find us on Twitter at Lumos Maxima Pod, on Instagram at Lumos Maxima Podcast, and you can email us super long comments at lumosmaximapodcast@gmail.com. We don't get a lot of emails, which, you know, that's fine. But I want someone to be a pen pal with me.
Okay. Yeah,
that'd be fun. Yeah. I want a Harry Potter pen pal. Help us in the podcast out by, did you just say speaking of, are you going to keep talking?
Wow, Sarah.
This episode is so long. It's such a long episode. Go ahead.
I was going to say that if anyone listening has done their own version of a Harry Potter party, show us pictures and let us know.
Yes. Send those you in. Dick. Yes. All right, fine. That's okay, I guess. Send those in, email them or DM us. Let us know if you don't want us to feature them. But if you don't say don't feature them, we definitely will. That's such a good idea. Or if you guys dressed up as something super rad Harry Potter related for Halloween, we want to see those too.
Yeah.
You can help us and the podcast out by rating, reviewing, and subscribing to our feed on different listening platforms. It helps us move up in the ranks. It makes us feel pretty. No, it doesn't. It makes us feel talented at podcasting. And it lets us know that our microphones aren't too shitty and our editing isn't too bad for people to still love us. Because we are we have a $0 budget. So,
hey, idea.
Yeah, so we really appreciate positive feedback. It makes us feel like our hard work is worth it because it takes time. This episode is 67 minutes, which means it will take me roughly 9 hours to edit. No, it won't really. But it makes us feel good. We would love it if you would share the podcast with people, and we would especially love it if you would leave a physical review for us. I know you can't do it on all platforms, but you can definitely do it on like Apple Podcasting. And those make us feel pretty inside. So do that. Next week, we are starting Series 2, Relationships, Part 2, Friendships. And this may be just like 8 bajillion episodes unless we can find a cohesive way to group friendships. Because the book is basically like friendship and love fix everything. So we're going to try and work our magic. Get it? Magic. On... Delaney hates me on how to group them appropriately, because we definitely don't want to leave any out because it's such a central theme and a central part of the story. So if you have input for it, definitely hit us up, give us ample time to get it into the pod. And if not, we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah.
All right. Catch you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.